Welcome to the Genetically Speaking podcast. I'm Eli Robertson, and I'll be your host. And today we'll be talking with Luciane Kavarlu. Luciane, would you introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Luciane Renata Silveira de Carvalho, but as a professional, they named me as Luciane Carvalho. And I am a doctor and assistant professor at the endocrinology department of the University of São Paulo Medical School. And I work at the Hospital das Clínicas. And my main interest in research is to treat patients with gross hormone deficiency. So they come to the clinic with short stature. And in the investigation process, we diagnose them as a gross hormone deficiency, isolated, but they can develop other hormone deficiencies during their lifetime. And it's a rare disease. It's about 1 to 10,000 live births. So it's very rare, but I've been learning a lot of things with this population that's rare, but they are unique. So I work with something that is something very, very different from the other, because most of them don't. When they come to the clinic, they are not able to have gross hormone and they become short. So it's very tough to get a job, to be educated. And I work with this kind of population in the hospital.
To start us off, would you take a minute to tell us a little bit about how you became interested in science and medicine and your career from how you started to where you're at now?
Yes, it's very interesting because when I become an associate professor, I had to write about my life the way you are asking me now. And one of the things that really, really remind me, when I was 4 years old, I have a dream with my pediatrician and I was in love with him. And I told my mom, "Mom, I'm going to be a doctor." 4 years old. When I was 5 years old, I told my mom, "Mom, I'm going to be a researcher." 5 years old. And my whole career, my whole period of life, I came from a middle class. And my parents, they really invested in our education. And to become a doctor, you have to spend money, time, you have to have family support to get where you want to go. And my family all gave me this support. And when I decided to do endocrinology, I didn't have any idea that I was going to work with a rare disease. Because here in Brazil, we do first MD and then PhD. And when I went to do my PhD, it was with short stature due to gross hormone deficiency. And it was very, very difficult to find patients like that. But I came to a very huge hospital, and they were pioneer in the decade of 1988 to extract gross hormone from dead pituitary people, and they used to treat patients. So we became a center, a single center with a lot of patients. It's rare, but I see 10 patients a week.
Wow.
With this rare disease. So I learned much with them. And then since I became being a doctor, I was always asking to myself, is there any way to make their life better? Is there anything that I can do for them? Because they are rare. Nobody's going to give attention to them. And then I contacted Professor Mehul Dattani, that was in London at the Great Ormond Street, because I found out one allelic variant in a gene that he described, but not with the same phenotype. And then I contacted him. I went to London. I did the functional study. And the girl involved in this paper, she told me, I don't want to keep taking everyday injections for the growth hormone. Is there anything else that I can use? And I told her, no, unfortunately, the only way I have to treat you, because growth hormone is not good just for growing, but for the whole life, we do not have anything. And then I got, okay, I have to find out something that can help them at least to have a better life, to have kids, because they can't have kids. And then I started working with stem cell, with Sally Kemper. But my main aspect, I was the first, the only one that brought all this expertise with transitory transfection. When I came from London, that I was doing my PhD, and I was ever, all the time, ahead of everybody. And this way, I start thinking about how to get a better life for treatment. And everybody that came to my life, they gave support to my crazy ideas. And then I got to where I am right now. So that girl was 5 years old, knew who she was become to be in the adult life. Because now I am a researcher. I'm first a doctor and then a researcher. And that makes me very, very happy because I work with the things that I like. I decide not to have private clinic, just to work with public hospital. And different from the US, the public hospital means people don't pay for their doctor visit. The government is going to pay for them. And it's very, very crowded. But because I work with a rare disease, I can give them better life, better quality. And I have a lot of diversion in my students because nowadays I can't go to the bench because my eyes are not good. So I trained a lot of different with diversity backgrounds to be part of my team. And I'm very proud of them and very happy that we could move on and we were able to do in a GIST pituitary cells to understand what's going on with them. So that's why it meant to be. And now I am an endocrinologist and a researcher.
Well, it seems like you knew very early on exactly what you wanted to do and you've been able to get there. Now that you have been here for a while and you can look back over all the choices you've made over your career, are there any times that if you went back, you might make a different choice? Or along the way, have you had some successes that you're really proud of that you want to tell us about?
You know, when I was doing my medical degree, I had a lot of problems with blood. I couldn't see blood that I found. But fortunately, I was studying in Rio Preto, that is my hometown. The university I was going to was there. My parents lived there. I stayed with my parents all the period of my medical school. And when those things become happening, I have the support of my family. I have the support of my friends and everybody that saw that I had a problem, but I really wanted to move on. And all the support make me to be what I am right now. And when I was at the end of my medical school degree, I realized that I was not going to be a surgery, neither obstetrician, because I couldn't see blood because I faint. And then I realized, okay, medical school give a broad range for doing different things. So I'm going to work with something that it doesn't see blood. So I'm going to do internal medicine. Okay, I went to do internal medicine, but I realized that I didn't like those emergency room. So I gave up to do cardiologist. And I say, okay, I'm going to do endocrinology and work with something that does not make the connection with blood, with emergency, even the clinic. And then I decided to be an endocrinologist that works just with children that don't grow. It's my expertise. One of the things that I can tell you that I never give up my dreams, never. And I don't know why. Every time that I have something difficult to jump, a person very special come to my life and help me to jump that obstacle and then keep going. So I am very fortunate of having people that came to my life even when I was a student and now that I am a PI, because I can't do everything alone. We need to think as a group, team. And when you think that you are not alone, that you have a team, you are empowered of keep going. Even something can be hard and tough, you are going to get there. So that was one of the things that changed my life. And when I was doing my fellowship at the United Kingdom, I went to Edinburgh and I had a doctor background. I knew how to recognize a disease, how to treat a disease, not to do gel shift, not to do a transfection transition. So I was very naive for this a new world for me. And then I get the chance to keep in touch with, he was a collaborator of my supervisor in the UK, and he treated me very bad. He told me that I was the most lazy brain he had seen in his life. I was the worst guest he had in his lab. So I was very depressed when I came back. And by the end, I couldn't finish none of my experiments. So my Philly was a person that's loser. It was very bad for me. But that point was very important for me to know what I didn't want to be as a supervisor. And it was a lesson for me, because the relationship I had with my students are completely different. So I have a model, somebody that was a role for me, two women. One, it was Professor Sally Kemper, that's very generous. And the other one is Professor Berenice Mendonça, that is another very gentle person. Imagine that I was in the UK and I was crying because none of my experiments worked at that day. And my supervisor at the time, Professora Berenice, called me. At the moment I was crying, something happened that connected both of us. And I started crying over the phone. And she told me, don't worry, ask for help. I am the person that can pressure you. I'm not pressuring you. And I told everybody that was going to receive you there that you are naive in many of the techniques, so calm down. Imagine this. You receive a call from somebody that was your boss, and the person just make you feel up. And that I learned. And that way I see my students, not as somebody that worked for me, but somebody that has family, has problem, and they are going to work if they are good. So I learned with my role model, that the way they use in the U.S., their role model.
One of the things uniting the people that we're talking about across this season are people who have successful careers in science, research, or medicine, but also value increasing the diversity of the scientific workforce, having better equity and access to the benefits of genetics and genomics and modern medicine, and the inclusion of more varied groups in research. You've already talked about it a little bit, about how you see the people in your lab. You want to have a diverse set of backgrounds, and that different people need different things and also can provide different assets to a research group. What do having these sorts of varied backgrounds, what does it mean to you and why is it important?
You know, I came, as I said to you, I came from a middle-class family. But even being a middle class, my parents support all my studies. And in Brazil, we have two different ways for being educated. One is you came for a good class that can afford for your studies. And when you are in the high school, you pay for your studies in order to get a better position in federal university or state university that you don't pay, you know? So for those people that have money to invest in the high school, they are going to enter in the public that is public for people that can pay, okay? So what happened in my time, we didn't have some codes for people that don't have too much money to enter in a public university because they don't have money to do a high school in a high level. But fortunately, in the last years, they have been changing things. The primary education in Brazil in a public school is not good. There's a lot of people that don't go to work. There's a lot of strikes. So it's very, very bad. But there's one point that they are changing. So in the university I am, that's a public and very well known and respected around the world, what they did that half of the people come from those very high income salary, and there are those that did not have this fortune. So what happened that to make them equity, what they do is to get somebody from the high school, and everybody's going to do the same test, but it means the way you have your rational, so you have chance to enter into university, in a public university. So nowadays in our university, 50% is Indian and Black and poor, and 50 are those that were more fortunate when they came. So this is something to try to minimize these differences, but for sure, we have to get started in the base, in the first year class, to help them to have a better education. So then they are going to be equal in order to apply for a position in university. They are going to be equal to apply for a job. So Brazil is in baby steps, but I'm happy that somebody thought about that. And when I know that most of my students, they didn't have the opportunity to go to a public school. Many of them came from a private school because they are poor, they couldn't enter in a university that's public, but they try, and the government helped them, like a tuition in US. So then they can pay after being graduated. And I have a lot of them that come to my lab, and I try as much as I can to help them. But there's one thing that I really don't open hand, is to be committed with science and have the soul for being very involved with something that can help people's lives. So I don't care if they are Black, if they are different sexuality, if they come from a poor public school, if they come from a private one, but if they want to learn, they can count on me as a scientific mother.
Well, it sounds like there are definitely issues with access to education and the opportunities, and you do end up getting people in your lab to come from all different types of backgrounds, and that you try to give them as much of a chance as you can, as long as they want to do something that's going to be able to help people out and they really want to learn and do something good. Are there other problems that you've run into trying to help increase diversity, equity, and inclusion at the hospital or university, where problems have come up, and how have you gone about trying to navigate those?
Your question is very important because...
This has been part one of our interview with Luciani Carvalho. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Eli Robertson. Join us next week to hear part two.